There's something that really annoys God, that really upsets him, that is a major theme, particularly in the Old Testament, and that is God hates it when his people keep his feasts insincerely. Let's start with Psalm 81. Now, the first five verses are called to joyfully celebrate a feast. Sing aloud to God, make a joyful shout, and the Levites are called upon to make the music and the priests to blow the trumpets. But then the psalm abruptly changes. God answers this call to go up and keep the feast with a rebuke of his people for being so sinful. And he clearly hates this sort of surface level external spirituality. Twice in the Proverbs, in Proverbs 15 and Proverbs 21, we read, "The sacrifice of the wicked is abomination. How much more when he brings it with a wicked mind?" I've said before that in the Proverbs, Solomon is often alluding to Saul and anyone who is in fact against him or the house of David. And I think here, what he says is true. He has in mind how Saul was condemned for offering sacrifice to God when he had his own agenda. And actually, that is why God condemned him. God said, I'm not interested in the fat of rams. Obedience is to me far more important than sacrifice. Now, I want to just put together a whole load of passages which really are absolutely God red-hot angry about this issue of offering sacrifice and keeping feasts to me insincerely. So here we go, Isaiah 1. "To what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices unto me? I'm fed up with the burnt offerings of rams and the fat of beasts. I don't delight in the blood of bullocks, lambs, or he-goats. When you come to appear before me, who asked you to do this? Don't bring any more of your vain oblations. Your incense is an abomination to me. Your keeping of the Sabbaths and the new moons and the calling of feasts, I can't bear it. It is sin, even the solemn meeting. Your new moons and your feasts, my soul hates. They're a trouble to me. I'm weary and fed up with them." Isaiah 66, "He that kills an ox is as if he killed a man. He that sacrifices a lamb is as if he cut off a dog's neck. He that offers an oblation as if he offered pig's blood. He that burns incense as if he blessed an idol. They have chosen their own ways, and their soul delights in their abominations." Micah 6, verse 7. "Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams or 10,000s of rivers of oil?" Amos 5, 21. "I hate, I despise your feast days. I will not smell in your solemn assemblies. Though you offer me burnt offerings and meat offerings, I will not accept them, neither will I regard your peace offerings. Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not hear the melody of your viols." Jeremiah 6:20. "To what purpose comes there to me all this incense and all this sweet cane from a far country? Your burnt offerings are not acceptable, nor your sacrifices sweet to me." I think the crudest, perhaps, is in Malachi 2, verse 3. "I will corrupt your seed and spread dung upon your faces, even the dung of your solemn feasts, and one shall take you away with it." The allusion is to taking the dung of the sacrifices without the camp to an unclean place. And this is what God is saying he will do to them. The language is, I think, intentionally crude and sort of shocking, that I will take the dung of your offerings, the animals you bring to me, and I will put it on your face. And I will drag you away from your solemn feasts with the animals and the dung that goes with them. Right, that's enough. I think God's made his point, and there's many other verses one could quote. Now, what then is our equivalent of the solemn feast? Your solemn day, God said, your solemn assembly that I hate. The solemn meeting, that is iniquity, Isaiah 1:13. Well, it's not rocket science to figure that the equivalent under the New Covenant is breaking bread. And did the early church abuse it in the same way? Yes, they did. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, the chapter we read normally about the breaking of bread, is clear enough that God really was so upset with the early church because they were mixing the breaking of bread meeting with their own agendas. And particularly he was upset at the way that somebody was getting drunk and having a feast at the breaking of bread, and somebody else was starving hungry and was just ignored. This was absolutely obnoxious to him, and there is pretty much the threat, I think, of judgment there in the first century sense. So what are we to make of this? We inevitably do the equivalent of the feasts. We pray. We pray to God. We do the breaking of bread. But we can really upset God if we allow this to be mere external ritualism. There's no good saying, oh, yeah, okay, well, I won't do it then. Don't upset God. Well, yeah, by voting out of all this with your feet, as it were, no, okay, I won't pray, I won't break bread, I won't do anything like that. Well, you are, as it were, choosing to not identify yourself with Jesus. So, as so often happens in spiritual life, you come only ultimately to two choices, either for God or against God. There is no purgatory, there is no third way, there's no third choice in this life. Everything in the end is never neutral. It is either for him or against him. He who doesn't gather with me, he says, scatters, Jesus said. And that's why the cup of wine is a double symbol. It is a symbol of condemnation. Babylon is given a cup of wine to drink. And yet, 1 Corinthians 10, the cup of blessing. It is also a symbol of blessing. And that's why we are told that we run the risk of drinking damnation or condemnation to ourselves if we do not discern the Lord's body. And I'm grateful, really, that it is like that, that there is no third way. Because if there was, we'd all take that. But there isn't. It's either for him or against him. And seeing that that is the case with all our heart, all our soul, all our mind, all our desire, all the dominant desire of our soul is for him.